Well, we're so glad you've chosen GoldSeek.com Radio as a trusted business and investing information source. Today's special guest, Professor Lawrence Kotlikoff from Boston University and author of The Inform Act. Professor Kotlikoff, a professor of economics at Boston University and author of Clash of the Generations, as well as author of the Inform Act, the Intergenerational Financial Obligations Reform Act, focused on improving the welfare of every American. Welcome back, Professor.
Thanks for having me.
Let's begin today with your well-known U.S. national debt calculation that our fiscal gap is about 15 or more times the reported $12 trillion official national debt. Maybe tell us some of the implications of such an enormous debt on our national balance sheet.
So we've been running a Ponzi scheme for decades at the government level. Both parties have participated in it. What we do is we take money from young people. We call it taxes. We hand it to old people. And then at the same time, we promise young people that they'll get back money in the future in exchange for these taxes, but what they'll get back won't be called principal plus interest. It will be called transfer payments. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, these are examples. So had we used different words, we would have a vastly larger official debt. So what we've done is we've kept liabilities off the books. We've put them off the books or kept them off the books, just the same way Enron did in their accounting before they went under and were discovered. But the U.S. government has done this in a massive manner. And it's not just, let me be clear, the liabilities are not just Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, but there's government defense spending. We have to cover defense spending from now really through the end of time. It's not like the defense, our defense needs are going to go away entirely ever. We have to pay for the president's lunch every day. There's a whole host of liabilities that the government has, and they also have a host of revenues coming in. And if you look in present value, the value in the present of all the expenditure of the commitments and all the taxes that are projected to pay for those commitments, and you use the congressional budget. This is projections here, not mine. You find that the fiscal gap is $210 trillion large to be compared with the $13 trillion in official debt that the government's reporting. So we've been looking at the trees, not the forest. We've been looking at the bushes, really, when it comes to understanding our fiscal finances. And I'm speaking not as a right-wing Republican, you know. Somebody says that the country's running a Ponzi scheme might sound like somebody from the Tea Party, right? I'm actually somebody who's voted Democratic presidents for years, including President Obama twice. So it's not coming out of any partisan position. I'm not a local person. I think that both parties are just awful when it comes to dealing with our fiscal issues, and both parties are complicit in leaving enormous burdens for our kids and grandkids. And it's all going to end very badly. So this is strong language and statements, but it doesn't mean it's not true. We have in the Inform Act, if you go to the informact.org, this fiscal gap accounting has been formally endorsed by over 1,200 economists from every top university in the country, Princeton, Yale, Harvard, MIT, Stanford, Chicago, Brown, you name it, every top place, every Ivy League school is represented. And there was also 17 Nobel Prize winners who have endorsed this bill. Now, you can't get 17 economist degree on anything, let alone 1,200, and let alone get 17 Nobel laureates to say this is what we should do. So this is the economics profession in mass saying that we're cooking the books, and that we need to do honest, long-term, intertemporal, what we call intertemporal budgeting. And the fiscal gap is our best tool, and it shows the country's bankrupt.
It appears as though you're up against quite an enormous edifice. For instance, when we talk to the entrenched interests, this neo-Keynesian outlook, which I think, you know, John Maynard Keynes wouldn't even recognize 80 years ago. It does seem to be at the heart of what you're battling against.
Well, I would say it's not just Keynesian. We have, I view Keynesian economics as kind of black magic, and I view supply-side economics as equally black magic. So we've got people on both sides of the political aisle trying to win elections by hiding our fiscal realities, keeping that from the taxpayers, and then promising that you can cut taxes, don't have to pay for what you spend, or that you can spend more and it will pay for itself. The economy will expand. So from Art Laffer on the one hand to Paul Krugman on the other, when it comes to any kind of responsible statement about what kind of policies will actually pay for themselves. You know, so Krugman is saying, let's just spend more. It's going to stimulate the economy, and we're going to get so much more revenue as a result that it will pay for itself. And Art Laffer is saying, cut tax rates. People will work so much more. It'll stimulate the economy, and bingo, you'll have the only tax rate that I see that has the potential to really stimulate the economy if you cut it, and certainly if you could replace that tax source with higher personal income taxes, would be the corporate income tax. If we eliminated the corporate income tax and had shareholders having to pay taxes every year on the profits that their corporations earn for them, impute the share of profits to them and have them paid on a personal level, then you would actually stimulate the economy quite a lot. And I've simulated that with some other economists. If people go to Kotlikoff.net, they can see an article called Simulating the Elimination of the Corporate Income Tax, and they can read about this. So, but in general, just cutting personal rates is not going to expand the economy, and it's really going to do the opposite. It's going to give people an incentive to consume more. The country will save even less than it is. It's already saving at 2%. It used to save at 15% of national income. It's investing next to nothing as well. Used to invest 15% of national income. Now our net investment is 4% of national income. So what we've seen in the post-war period is that a really negative impact on these measures of economic performance, saving and investment, and that's really what economic simulation models would predict. If you run these policies, you encourage consumption, you discourage saving and investment, and the people that are consuming so much more relative, you know, compared to anybody else, are the elderly. Their average consumption, take a 75-year-old. The average consumption of a 75-year-old used to be about 40% below that of a 40-year-old. Now it's probably twice, 100% larger than that of a 40-year-old.
Professor, you've raised so many interesting issues here. It reminds one of the receding waterline at a public beach. There's nothing on the horizon, but suddenly the water recedes drastically. Boats are, you know, left high and dry, and then the tsunami suddenly appears on the horizon 100 feet high. When will the crest of this tide reach our shores? You see it coming, and many of your colleagues, as you say, it's virtually impossible to get so many academics and intellectuals on board of any topic, but they're pounding the table here. What will be the signs of the approaching tidal wave?
Well, if enough people start taking notice, people need to understand that the government's printing a lot of money to pay Congress's bills. I mean, the Federal Reserve has been. Unfortunately, Chairman Yellen has stopped that practice, but Ben Bernanke printed money like he increased the basic money supply by a factor of 4. So when people see these kinds of fiscal problems, they're going to realize that the government's going to be printing money, even more money in the future than it's already printed. It's already laid the foundation for hyperinflation, given what it's printed in the last 7 years. And they're going to not accept a long-term interest rate on treasury, 30-year treasury bills or whatever it is, 3-4% right now. They're going to demand 20%, some high number, to deal with their expectations of inflation. So what would happen is that interest rates will shoot up, and that will depress the economy, potentially put us in a recession. So we're just, we have a gradual increase in interest rates. It doesn't have to necessarily have a crisis overnight. But the more likely scenario is a kind of a gradual malaise, which is kind of what's gripped the country for decades now. We've got a lot of people that aren't earning much money. They're not earning much more than they earned back in the mid-60s in terms of average take-home pay in today's dollars. So the economy's got a lot of problems. I'm not saying the fiscal policy has caused all these problems. Make the investments in the country that we need, whether it's education or infrastructure. So this is going on kind of the path of Argentina, which used to be the fifth highest per capita GDP country in the world, and now it's a developing country again. This happens to countries that run policies like we're running. I can't emphasize enough the importance of getting the INFORM Act passed, and all your listeners, they all have senators and congressmen. They all need to get on the horn and get that bill passed. And all they have to do is go to theinformact.org, learn about the bill, and then really get very active in supporting that bill.
Professor, when you talk to many of the folks in economics today, it's just so counterintuitive to the entrenched interest, I think you'd agree, is heresy, to the mindset, I think, that started around, I think you'd probably agree, around the Reagan era. But you've found the flaw. You've identified the fatal Achilles heel. How can we make this more palatable to people who really require a sea change in their thinking?
Well, they can read our book, The Clash of Generations, that I wrote with Scott Burns. We explain pretty clearly why the fiscal gap is the only relevant measure for our fiscal situation, how it's, why it's so big. Part of it is the demographics. The country's getting relatively old, but in large part, we're just spending far more than we're taking in taxes. We've been doing so for many years now, and we are continuing, the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, is projecting that into the future, even under their most realistic scenario, which is called the alternative fiscal scenario. So we have to change course. And whether you're Democrat, Republican, or independent, if you have kids, you have to say, look, the most important thing is making sure we have a healthy economy for our kids. We can't leave them massive fiscal burdens that they won't be able to pay. We're going to get caught up in all this because we won't get our Social Security checks or our Medicare checks. People think that Social Security is in somewhat bad shape, but it's manageable. We can raise the taxes in Social Security a little bit and somehow we'll be okay for a while. That's not true. Social Security has its own fiscal gap calculation, which they actually do, the trustees do, but they hide the actuaries of the Social Security Administration do the calculation, but they hide it in a appendix to the trustees report, which is in table, I think it's 6F1 at this point, very way in the back of the trustees report. It shows the system is 33% underfinanced, and that means that we need a 4 cents on the dollar tax hike. Every dollar of covered earnings, you pay taxes now. Social Security taxes, 12.4% employer plus employee on all your earnings up to about $117,000 right now. If we have to have a 4 percentage point increase, that means 4 cents out of every dollar up to $117,000 would have to go to the government and you get nothing back. That's if we do it immediately. If we don't, the tax hike has to be even bigger. Now, this is not me doing anything but looking at the trustees' own table and just trustees' report table and telling the trustees something that they apparently don't have the political courage to pronounce, which is that Social Security is broke. It's in far worse shape than the Detroit pension funds. But Social Security itself is not as in bad a shape as the overall fiscal enterprise, which is about 58% underfinanced. In other words, we need an immediate and permanent 58% increase in every single tax, federal tax, FICA taxes, corporate income taxes, personal income taxes, estate and gift taxes, excise taxes, to come up in present value with $210 trillion to close this fiscal gap if we're just doing it through tax changes. So if people go to my website, which is kotlikoff.net, they can follow some of my columns about this problem. I've got a website called thepurpleplans.org. They can go there. And then for personal protection, in terms of their own finances, I have a small company on the side that does personal financial planning, and we have a website called MaximizeMySocialSecurity.com, which helps people figure out how to get the most from Social Security. Now, that may sound contradictory. Why am I decrying the financial status of Social Security and at the same time trying to help people get what's theirs? Well, the reason is that I think everybody needs to get everything, you know, we need to treat people fairly if we've got a system. So some people should not make out like bandits because they understand the ins and outs of the Social Security system, which is incredibly complicated, and others not. So we put together this top-ranked software called Maximize My Social Security, which helps people. We also have another program that does long-term financial planning at esplanner.com. It stands for Economic Security Planner, esplanner.com. So, you know, I do, I'm trying to help people at the personal level, but also help our kids, and we have to make changes. And the purpleplans.org have a set of plans that fix things.
Before we wrap up, I wonder, is there any simple way that we can express just how broke, unfortunately, the country is today? You know, most of the talk seems to be pointing to 10, 30, 40 years in the future.
$210 trillion, and it's a credit card bill, and it's today's credit card bill, and it's growing with interest. It grew $5 trillion between last year and this year. So it was $205 trillion last year, now it's $210 trillion this year. So we're not broke in 10 years or 30 years or 50 years. We're broke today as a nation, just like Detroit is broke today. Yeah, could they get by for another year or two? Well, at some point, creditors realized that the city is broke and they weren't going to lend any more money to Detroit because they looked ahead. And we're not looking ahead, but when you do look ahead, you see this country is in far, far worse shape than Detroit.
Are Detroit and Memphis canaries in the coal mine? Are they the ant farm that we need to be watching?
No, we just need to pass the fiscal, the Inform Act. Then the Congressional Budget Office will be forced to make public what the entire economics profession is saying needs to be done. And then we'll start discussing publicly and nationally the fiscal gap. And then the whole conversation won't be about $13 trillion debt, but a $210 trillion fiscal gap.
Okay, Dr. Kotlikoff, we want to thank you for an excellent discussion today. And we will put up links to direct our listeners over to the Inform Act, as well as all of your latest topicality. Best of luck to you, sir.
It's been a great pleasure. Bye-bye.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.